Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast Optimize Memory When Designing Wearables. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speaker, Elad Baram from SanDisk. Today's schedule consists of about 50 minutes of presentation material, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some features of your audience console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit a question at any time during the presentation. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too. And one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. Our presenter today is Elad Baram. He is the Director of Product Marketing Management at SanDisk, where he manages marketing activities for the company's mobile and connected solutions business. In this role, Baram is responsible for product definitions as well as long-term roadmap development for embedded memory solutions. Baram joined SanDisk in 2005 and has held a variety of positions relating to marketing and engineering. Previously, he was an embedded software developer for carrier-class telecommunications platforms and was a lead developer of an edge router team for Atrica, which was acquired by Nokia. Baram earned his bachelor's degree in communication systems engineering at Ben-Gurion University in Israel. Elad, the floor is yours.
Hi, everyone. Appreciate the opportunity I was given to speak about this interesting topic of designing memory into wearable devices. Very excited about that. Before we start, our legal department didn't give me a waiver on that, so I'll just state the short version that we will be making some forward-looking statements during this presentation regarding industry trends, the storage market, and future products. Actual results may differ materially from those expressed in the forward-looking statement. And we are excited about this opportunity here because wearable is not really about only about functionality of the device itself. It's really about fashion, about how people express themselves, about personal data collection. So there is much more to it than just technology. We'll speak a little bit about the market, and then we'll dive into the technology segment. So how do we look into the market today? The first segment is really the health and fitness monitor. Those are fairly simple devices today. They capture data which is not to a big amount, like steps, heart rate, things like that. Then the next category in the market is the wearable camera. Those really started initially as industrial applications and law enforcement applications, but they're becoming very strong in the consumer market. We put here GoPro as an example. I was asked why we are categorizing GoPro as a wearable. My answer to that was that if a helmet is part of your outfit, so probably GoPro is a wearable. But more than this, as we looked into the CES show in Vegas just last month, we see that there is a big trend of minimizing those, and there are going to be real wearable devices. Next category is the smartwatches, becoming very, very interesting, offer a lot of new use cases and applications, whether this is notifications, monitoring your stock, things of that nature, monitoring the weather condition, and so on. Still companion to your mobile devices, and the reason is that there is no direct internet connectivity yet. Galaxy Gear is a nice example for the watches with also an incorporate camera, so there is also video recording capability into it. Uh, And the next category of wearable computers. Those are headed by the iconic Google Glass, completely independent Android machines that offer a very unique use cases for the consumer and also consume a lot of memory as of today. We have put here in this slide some latest announcements from the CES. As you can see, this goes way beyond just watches or glasses, even goes to socks and sneakers, medical, whatsoever. It's a really interesting market, and it's evolving really, really, really fast with huge amount of innovation into it. Let's look at the number of the market. We took the data from Strategy Analytics. The market today, as I stated before, is 90% of the devices are actually fitness and health monitors. But as we go into 2017, we expect that most of the market will be around the smartwatches and smart glasses. And again, those devices consume a lot of memory. Even today, we are seeing that glasses is having 16 gigabytes of memory. Watches are ranges from 1 gigabyte up to 8 gigabytes. So for the memory industry, it's very interesting to watch on those devices. Looking from a petabyte perspective, so we use the term petabyte when we look on the market from storage point of view, because this is what represents basically the fab output, how many wafers need to be shipped out into this industry. Petabyte is 1 million of gigabytes. So looking into 2015 and 16, we're going to get to numbers which are nearing 1,000 petabytes, which is fairly big. It's not as big as the mobile or the tablet market. Those markets are way bigger than that. But it's still interesting market to look on. And we think that the way to look at it is not only by the petabytes that this market will generate, it's also about the innovation that it will drive. And the innovation that required in order to address the wearable market can actually be adopted into the adjacent market, the existing market of tablets and mobile phones. Big factor in the adoption of wearable devices will be the application. And the more application that will be there, we're going to see a much more compelling use cases for consumers to adopt those devices. We are using a strategy analytic data. It's a poll that was done among different application developers. And as you can see, when you compare 2013 to 2014, in 2013, only 3.5% of the developers were making application for wearables. In 2014, we are seeing 27% having the intention to develop applications for wearable. This is a factor of X8, and it's a huge growth in the application development. Now, as more and more applications will be there in the market, consumers will start to adopt them. I will use a personal example here. I will use a personal example here. So I'm a cyclist, and cyclists are consuming a lot of data in real time, whether it's the current speed, cadence, slope, distance, a lot of data being consumed in real time. The difficulty is that when you really need the data, many times it's very difficult to actually get it. The reason is that imagine a situation where you go downhill and you are like 30 to 40 miles per hour, and you need to get the data. You cannot take your sight out of the road. In such condition, you really cannot get the data that you need. And my vision for wearable, the place where I'm connected into it on the personal level, is to be able to experience it in completely a new way. As you can see in this photo, if the real data on the real time can be displayed in kind of a heads-up monitor, that can enable people like myself to experience the cycling in a completely new way and compelling way that will make it much more enjoyable. And when you are making such an amazing thing and great experience, you would like to document it and to record it. So I'm switching now to more of the technical side of this presentation. And this slide is really showing the performance requirement for different video resolutions. You can see that for full HD 1080p record, you need about 3 megabytes per second. If you go full HD 1080p 60 frames per second, this will require about 5 megabytes per second from the storage. If you go for an ultra HD, this is 4K resolution, then you need about 15 megabytes per second. And the reason I'm putting those numbers is that one needs to remember those when designing a storage solution for a wearable components. Because when we'll speak on power performance trade-offs, we will see that we really need to have an optimized design for those. So when you have a video recording to this extent, and as resolutions will go up over time on those devices, also the capacities inside, the storage capacities inside those devices will need to go up. So in the graph, you can see the our estimation for smartwatches and wearable glasses from density point of view, gigabytes per device. Watches today are about 1 to 8 and probably will go higher. Glasses today are about 16 gigabytes. We expect this to go to 32 and in the future even to 64 gigabytes. Now, a key challenge when designing storage into those devices is the PCB space. And we really need to find a way to minimize the size of the memory solution. This is a typical PCB size PCB size of a flagship smartphone. I'm just putting now the photo itself. It's about 6,000 square millimeters. This is the real size is about 113 millimeter on 55 millimeter. And this example is specifically taken from one of the Motorola Droid phones, actually. If we take different examples, like one of the Galaxies or the iPhone, it will be about half of this size. The reason for the change is that this specific design is a three-layer design, meaning it's a screen, a PCB, and a battery. But on Galaxies or iPhone, it's kind of a two-layer design, meaning that there is a half of the PCB size, and then the battery is thicker. So there are kind of two layers of a screen, and then PCB side by side with a battery. When we look on wearable glasses, the size goes dramatically down. This is 800 square millimeter, and I'll put the photo of the PCB itself. What is interesting to see here is that the biggest chip on this PCB is actually the memory. You can see the one in the center. The size of this chip is 12 by 16 millimeter. And you can see that the PCB is literally edited around the memory component. It's about 13 millimeter width, which is a fraction of a millimeter just past the memory component in the center. When we look on watch, we even go smaller than that to about 500 square millimeter. And just put the photo in here to see how tiny the PCB become. And this is really amazing that this, we need to go from about 6,000 square millimeters into 500 square millimeter PCB. And it's a question how the memory industry can enable this level of minimization in the size of those devices. This photo here shows the existing JEDEC packages. JEDEC is the, just to explain a little bit about JEDEC, so it's the, an open standardization organization that is doing the standardization of both the eMMC and the UFS, and it's also doing the standardization of the packages themselves. So, of course, every vendor can make a non-standard package, but in order to make the storage solution usable for all the consumers and to have multiple sources and so on, JEDEC is the organization that is doing this standardization. Historically, the packages were quite big. You can see it started in 14 by 18 millimeters, which were about 252 square millimeter, and then it went down to 12 by 18, then 12 by 16. Today, the most common package is 11.5 by 13 square millimeter. This is about 150 square millimeter. The question is what's going to be next, because those packages are actually used in mobile phones, and we are looking for ways to drive those packages to lower sizes. So within JEDEC, there are several offering right now, 11 by 10 and 9 by 13, 8.5 by 13. There are some offering which are around 110 to 120 square millimeters. That's the packages that are right now in discussion. We believe that going forward for wearables, we need to find a solution that will be much more around 90 square millimeters, sub 100 square millimeters. And the way to do it is really to leverage the 1Z technology. I'll explain the meaning of 1Y and 1Z in those slides. 1Y technology we refer to as 19 by 19 nanometer technology node for the memory die itself. 1Z is the sub-19 nanometer. So this is the next process shrink for memory. It will be ready towards the end of the year, going towards 2015. Now, combining 1Z technology with 3-bit per cell technology will enable to use the smallest possible dies that will fit into wearable devices. Sticking to the next challenge of package height. So wearable devices, we believe, should be actually thinner than mobile devices today, but they are not really thinner as of now. I think that the memory industry should enable this lower Z height by offering solutions which have a lower Z height. However, it is very challenging from technology point of view. This photo here is kind of to give the feeling of how thin the memory dies are already today within the packages. So on the left side, it's a memory, it's just a NAND die. On the right-hand side, it's a piece of a notebook paper. So you can see that actually the NAND die is kind of one-third of the thickness of a notebook paper sheet, which is fairly amazing. Now, to make it even thinner, will create a lot of technology challenges. When you take the dies into even a thinner thickness, it creates a lot of reliability challenges on the NAND itself. Also, from standpoint of thermomechanical stress, it's becoming more difficult to manage from manufacturing yields point of view and from quality point of view. The dies become more sensitive to micro cracks and those type of phenomena. So it's going to be very difficult to make even thinner die within the package. On the substrate itself, it's also very difficult to make thinner substrate because this is not only a mechanical matter, it's also an electrical matter. We need more ground planes and signal integrity to maintain. So the thinner we go, it's becoming more challenging from those aspects. An option that we have now is not, I'll make kind of a paraphrase here, but look outside of the package and not inside of the package. So today the JEDEC packages, the BGA packages, are having bold diameters of about 0.3 millimeters. If we go to an LGA, which is a package without any balls, that will enable us to lower the storage solution by about 0.2 millimeters without actually changing the internal structure of the package itself. However, it does have its own challenges as it's probably going to break the pinout compatibility. It's difficult to maintain very small pitch like in existing packages today under LGA. I want to move now discussing elements of power consumption. The chart here presents different battery sizes of smartphones. You can see that the sizes are going from about 2,000 milliamps per hour up to 3,000 in the highest highest batteries range of for mobile phones. But when we go to a wearable computer like glasses, for example, then the size of the battery is about 500 milliamps. And on the smartwatch is between 200 to 300 milliamps. So there is a huge reduction in the battery size of those components. And that creates the importance of standby and leakage current to be much more critical than in today's mobile phones. So how do we make an optimal design for power and performance trade-off? So first, when you design a chip, and I'm speaking here on the ASIC controller, each memory component has its own controller. We are speaking here on eMMC or UFS. Those are managed devices, so there is an ASIC controller that is managing internally to the package. And when you design for high-performance component, of course, it's a high gate count, meaning that for more performance, simply put, you just need more silicon inside. And as you have more gates inside, you just consume more power, both on the active power and on the leakage power. So it's good to have an optimized design for the target performance and not overspec it and ending up with a memory component that is very high performance but also consumes a lot of power, which is beyond the envelope that will be enabled for wearable devices. Now, there is a question of UFS versus eMMC. So I'll touch the point. Both interfaces are standardized by JEDEC. For UFS, there is an advantage of I/O power efficiency, but this advantage is actually happening only during the bit data transfer. So the I/O interface is a little bit more efficient than in the eMMC. However, eMMC has some advantages in other states. So, for example, the idle state of the eMMC is much more efficient. This is in a factor of about 1,000x better power, meaning that there is almost no leakage for eMMC interface during idle. When we look on the sleep state, so then again, UFS, because it has a physical PHY, it's drive an extra leakage of between 50 microamps to about 100 microamps. And this extra leakage can be very critical when designing into wearable. I think that for mobile phone to charge it every night, this is something which is acceptable for consumers. But for wearables, I guess that type of use case will not really be adopted easily. So we really need to find the solutions that are minimizing the leakage current. And as of today and in the near future, it seems that eMMC is actually better solution than a UFS solution. To summarize what we have been discussing so far, so we think that using the 1Z technology and 3 bit per cell technology, we can drive a new package breed, which will be sub 100 square millimeter, probably going even to 90 square millimeter, leveraging the 1Z technology and the 3 bit per cell, as well as lowering the Z height by looking on other options such as LGA instead of BGAs. We really need to make the right power and performance design the trade-off. And eMMC offers a very good design in that respect, that it can really meet the performance requirement and will give a very good power attribute in the idle and in the sleep state, which is, most of the time the device actually is in either idle or in a sleep state. And of course, the innovation that will be come out of those solutions eventually can be adopted to the mobile space and into the tablet space. I think that with that in mind, Kurt, I'll hand it out to you.
Great. Thank you very much. I noticed there is a question email address you can send additional questions to if we don't get to them here. But again, we are to the Q&A portion. So let's head to the Q&A and see what people are asking here. In your presentation, you referred to discrete memory components. How do you see MCPs in the wearable space?
Well, that's a great question. So the need for minimization is actually applies for both discrete components and an MCP component. To make sure that everyone here is aligned when we state the term MCP, because it's being used in several terms in different industries. So MCPs is a solution where we package the NAND and the DRAM together in the same package. And it's something that is being used today in the mobile segment, specifically in the lower end of the entry-level smartphones. So the need to minimize exists on both of them. However, it is probably more difficult to minimize MCP package than a discrete package because of the fact that you need to align both the NAND die and the DRAM die. So each of the technology has its own shrinking roadmap, and it's difficult to put two different dies from different vendors and to align on size that will be good for everyone. On top of that, from electrical point of view, the routing of the DRAM signals through the substrate is much more challenging on MCP package. So I think that in general, it will be easier to minimize a discrete eMMC package and keep the DRAM on the POP, on the package-on-package, as being done today in most of the mobile phones out there.
Okay. You mentioned UFS and eMMC. There's a question about, do you recommend that eMMC 5.0 is the best solution for wearables, or what are the considerations when deciding on a technology?
Well, eMMC 5.0 is the next generation of eMMC. It offers some software features as well as a higher speed interface, HS 400 megabyte per second interface. I believe that according to the power specification that we are seeing today for wearable devices, eMMC 5.0 is not a must, meaning that an HS 200 device with a 200 megabyte per second speed should address this market in a fairly good manner. So into the future, at some point, most of the industry will move to eMMC 5.0. However, this is really being driven by smartphone performance requirement, and my view is that this is not a must for wearable devices. I think that the best design eventually would be to use HS200 with what I'm calling a kind of a lean, a very lean controller that will be the most power efficient and will just address the specific performance requirements that are needed for wearable.
Comment on the pin count and pitch specs on the memory.
On the pin count and pitch. So I was touching it before. The existing JEDEC packages are 0.5 millimeter pitch. This is the ball pitch for a standard JEDEC package. If we move to an LGA, then probably the pitch will need to be bigger. With an LGA, there are no metal balls, and typically LGA packages require higher ball pitch. So it is something that is doable, but probably going to break the backward compatibility from the existing JEDEC packages.
Okay. Do you see a trend towards package-on-package requirements in the wearable markets?
We are seeing some of the designs that are using a full solution of package-on-package, meaning a processor and NAND and DRAM stacked completely one on top of another. This is something that is doable from technology point of view. It's really a matter of, are you trying to optimize for lowest Z height and you have some more space on the PCB, or some designs Z height is really not a limiting factor and it's only the XY dimension that is the real limitation. However, when stacking processor and DRAM and NAND into a POP, there are other limitations, mainly thermal. So the fact that the DRAM and the NAND and the processor are packed together creates a lot of heat, and the heat is a factor that degrades the data retention of the memory. So essentially, those type of designs were existed in the past for some extent in the mobile industry, but eventually most of the designs went away from this type of packages because because of thermal limitation. It was just very difficult to manage, and the heat that was imposed on the NAND created a lot of reliability issues in the past. So I think it's not the best architecture, and eventually the best architecture is just to have the DRAM on the POP and have the NAND component, the eMMC component, as a discrete package.
Okay. What flash is better for wearables, low dynamic power, low leakage power? Can you characterize some of those specs?
I think that emphasis eventually should be on the low leakage solution. We see today on and I'm taking as a reference mobile phones, that if you take a 24-hour usage of a mobile phone, the actual time where the storage is really active is in the level of minutes, which means that more than 90% of the time the device is actually in idle or in sleep mode, and therefore eventually from battery consumption point of view, the sleep state and the idle states are more critical. Again, it's a matter of use cases. If we were designing a storage solution to a server with a 100% duty cycle, so probably the active power is the things to look at. I think that for wearable, where the use case is more about small data updates or some video recording, the active consumption is something that needs to be managed, but the sleep and idle state are the things that the key criteria to look on.
Okay. Your presentation focused a lot on the smartwatches and glasses. What are your views on memory requirements for other categories of wearables like fitness devices, small cameras, clothing, those kinds of things?
Yeah. So the reason we were focusing on the watches and glasses segments is because those are occupying kind of 4 gigabyte storage solution and above, which is when you look on the NAND technology, the smallest die today is actually 4 gigabyte. For devices for health monitors that are not collecting so much data, they probably won't need this level of 4 to 8 gigabyte solution. So that's the reason we are looking on devices which has much more capabilities, such as running an Android operating system or having video capabilities, because those application clearly needs gigabytes of storage, which reside better with the memory roadmap going, the NAND technology roadmap going to the future.
There was a question about SPI interface and how that fits into this world for memory.
And we are focusing today on the eMMC interfaces and the UFS interfaces. And SPI is something which, again, I think can maybe be a better fit for fitness monitors, but not when we go into the real high-end operating systems and, again, and real Android application. I guess that we need to upscale and go to eMMC type of interface.
Your presentation showed fairly low write speed requirements. What are your observations on the read speed?
So the write speed, we were looking at it from the perspective of video recording under an assumption that in a wearable device, you probably generate some content by recording and you do not necessarily download content into the wearable device. Read speed, higher read speed is something that can be useful for wearable devices, because at some point you do need to upload the data up either to the cloud or to another device. So then the question comes, what would be a reasonable read speed for those devices? Again, my take here is that given all the other communication protocol and all the and all the other connectivity in between the cloud and the device, speeds of between 100 to 200 megabytes per second are adequate to provide a very good user experience. So with this respect, if we go to devices that enable plus minus 100 megabytes per second read speed, it should provide a very good solution. Of course, there are solutions in the market today that enable 300 and 400 megabytes per second, but those come at the expense of pretty much high power consumption during that operation. So if we want to operate in 300 megabytes per second, that's going to take us to levels of, again, this is different implementation, but it's fairly linear, which means it's going to be at least twice as high from the active power consumption compared to a 100 megabytes per second component.
Question about the sleep state and how it works in conjunction with the memory. Are there control I/O pins on the memory, or is there support for sleep states built in, or is it just literally the absence of power on the memory itself?
Yeah. So the sleep state is a logical state that it's actually a command. When we look in either this is eMMC or UFS, there is it's a logical state where the host is actually moving the storage component into a sleep state. For most vendors, there is what is being often called auto sleep, which means if there is not activity for a certain amount of time, then the device will enter into this auto sleep autonomously, or the host can just give a command to the storage to go into a sleep state, and then actually the power rail for the NAND is being shut down, and then the only leakage that exists is some low leakage from the ASIC controller itself. The idle state is just a state when there is no activity. Again, in eMMC, in the idle state, there is almost no leakage. In UFS, it's a little bit different because because of the file. So there are PLLs. The interface is alive regardless if there is a bit transfer or not a bit transfer, and that's why eMMC is better in the sense that on idle, it has a big advantage and it saves the power during the transient state when you need to move from one state into another. EMMC will be more efficient in that respect.
A couple questions on environmental requirements. Can you cover any kind of specific environmental requirements unique to wearables, like humidity, temperature, anything odd or different in this world?
According to what we see now, we think that those environmental requirements are pretty much covered by the same conditions that are required for mobile devices. So most of our memory components today are qualified to minus 25 up to 85 degrees C for operating conditions, which I guess it's it's good for mobile and it's definitely good for wearable. I don't see how anyone can withstand those type of temperature on his body.
Right.
And then from humidity point of view, according to JEDEC, again, the components has to be qualified for moisture level sensitivity with a very high humidity. So I do not expect to have unique environmental requirements for wearable, which are on top of what is already exist for the mobile space today.
Right. In terms of humidity or non-condensing humidity, I assume the packaging needs to kind of worry about that if you've got some kind of swim wearable of some kind or something like that, perhaps.
Yes. So in that respect, if it's the actual device itself that needs to be sealed in order to enable the whole system to work together.
And you mentioned in terms of how thin these memories are, seems like it would make it fragile. Are there, and maybe this is kind of outside of your world, but maybe you've seen it in practice when your memory goes into these devices. What kind of packaging techniques are used in wearables to, you know, prevent dropping or hitting the wearable to just, you know, crush the memory? These things are extremely thin.
We've seen this actually in the mobile space also, that the packages are being tested for their robustness, whether those are drop tests that are being done for mobile phones, and many of the OEMs will just build a part and then they will make all kind of drop test, bend test, and will make sure that the overall package attachment to the PCB is robust enough to withstand all kind of shocks. In cases where the OEM thinks that it's not robust enough, there are techniques like underfill that can make it even more robust. So some designs are just using underfill, which is kind of a glue going, you know, in between the package and the PCB itself to make it more robust.
Good transition here. There is a question regarding if you recommend an underfill when mounting the package on a PCB.
Well, so underfill, it's a good solution. It just has one drawback of cost. So I've known from working with OEMs that it's something that is desirable from a mechanical standpoint, but it does add to the manufacturing cost. So typically OEM will try to avoid it if not necessary, if it's not a must. Another consideration is that some OEMs are concerned in case they need to remove for some reason the memory component from the device, and then it's more difficult to do it where there is an underfill. But I wouldn't say this is probably not a major consideration. The key one is really the slight cost added that associated with the underfill.
Seems like video is a large driver in growth in bit consumption, this question reads. For the wearable market, do you have a projection or any sort of indications as to what percentage of the market will include video capability, or how long it might take, or any kind of trends in that area?
So for wearable computers like glasses, the video is already there. Probably 100%. The question is, what's the video resolution recording? And today, what we are seeing is the processor 1080p, 30 frames per second is something which is, even in the low-end market, it's kind of becoming a standard. And going to the future, we are seeing a very cost-effective application processor that actually can support 2K resolution already. And on the wearable devices, on the wearable camera, computers, that's something that's probably going to be a standard feature. On the watches, it's still going to take some time. We see the Galaxy Gear with a 5-mega camera on it, probably setting the trend for other wearable watches, smartwatches with video. Again, we have put the data in the presentation. What is our model for capacity growth in the coming year? So it's in the presentation, the specific numbers.
What about the lifetime memory requirements? Does JEDEC make any comment on lifetimes or any sort of industry requirements for these people developing wearables?
This is an interesting question. So JEDEC doesn't define lifetime requirement. JEDEC basically defines the way, the methodology to qualify a memory to a specific requirement, but it doesn't state what the requirement is. So that's where JEDEC is more on the methodology of how to qualify. With regards to what is the expected lifetime, so In our view, the most aggressive use cases are actually mobile phones, because mobile phones are really 24/7, always on, always connected. Many people don't know that, but even if when you go to sleep and while you were sleeping, your mobile phone probably going to write hundreds of megabytes to the storage just because applications are synchronizing data from the cloud all the time. We believe that wearable devices, at least in the coming future, are not going to be the type of use case of 24/7, always connected all the time. So with this respect, it's probably not going to be as aggressive as mobile phone. So from a memory and lifetime point of view, devices that have been designed for mobile phone should be very suitable for wearable devices as well. We are actually looking on an opportunity maybe to do unique things if we take the requirements maybe into a lower life expectancy from endurance point of view, and then you can get a lot of other gains.
Ah, I see. Okay. Yeah, because some devices churn every year or two, and others you would expect to buy and be able to use it for multiple years. I guess it just depends on the wearable type and the target. We'll close on this question. Does SanDisk offer a specific package for wearables now?
So we are engaged with several OEMs now on wearable devices. Naturally, we cannot disclose the specifics of those engagements and product right now, but in the future, those devices will show up in the market. And beyond that, in the course of JEDEX, we will be proposing the next generation package that we think is appropriate.
Well, very good. That brings us to the end of today's eCast. Thank you very much, Elad, for sharing your insights on optimizing memory when designing wearables. We at Open Systems Media and SanDisk also want to thank all of you, the audience, for attending today and contributing great questions remotely. This audio eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen in 24 hours. We'll also be doing an audio-only podcast that will be available there as well. You could do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3s. Thank you all for attending, and have a great day.